And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 21 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. And gentlemen, if this podcast is 21 now, which up its own ass IPA is it choosing to drink tonight for the first time? Because there's no way this is a Coors podcast. This is some sort of pomegranate sour.
I wouldn't, exclusive's a bit strong, but the majority of alcohol I drink is Coors Light.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
The overwhelming majority of alcohol I drink is Coors Light.
Okay. How many have you had this morning?
Over under 2.5. I got the over.
You know, I do wonder, like, how, I mean, you think about a lot of things when you're a baseball beat writer. It's a long season. And I've never, like, obviously never did this, but, like, you do think, like, if I showed up drunk today, how long would it take someone to notice? You know, like, could I get through clubhouse just hammered? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, it would depend on aroma. You know what I mean? I have faith that you can be functional as far as, like, navigating. And everyone's like, man, he's just a little off today. But if you're reeking, you're reeking.
Boy, I wish I could talk about this in the theoretical. But I probably shouldn't talk about the 2015 World Series. So
yeah, we don't need to talk about me having to drive Mark to the workout day of the 2015 World Series because he legally, I believe, is still over the limit the next day.
We had some escapades the evening before and, like, got carried away. And I woke up in the morning, got in the car, backed out and realized, you know, this is not a good idea. Not a good idea. So I texted Andy and went, hey, you get to the park yet? Because I could use a ride. So anyway, worked out fine.
I respect that.
I've definitely had some day game after night games where it's like, I could, you know, I'd like walk to the park because I'm on the road and I'd be like, there's no way I should be driving a car right now. Like that would be bad. Like good times.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would feel as if I were sort of deceptive if I didn't share any stories with me. So here we go. One time I woke up and I realized I hadn't filed my World Series story. And I was like, oh my God, I closed my laptop and just like poof, racked out behind me. And oh, this is okay, I don't do this. And I opened it up and it was submitted. It was edited. It was published. It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Yeah, if I do say so myself,
I'm not telling you which World Series. It was not for this company, and I haven't done it since. It scared the bejeepers out of me. But you can't tell.
I just see Grant sipping a cup of coffee that morning, going, "Pretty good, pretty good,
pretty good." You know, well, anyway, I'm not going to say it was pretty good. I'm just going to say it wasn't career-ending, which to me,
you're here,
pretty good.
Yeah,
for now.
This feels like a challenge to all the roundtable heads out there, specifically maybe Riley Breckenridge of the band Thrice and the Twitter account Productive Outs. If you can find which of Grant's World Series stories that is, I will personally Venmo you $15.
It's probably something like maybe I overcompensated with four-syllable words instead of three-syllable words. And I'm referencing like I'm not doing Simpsons references because that's the straight stuff. I'm going deep on like the state. MTV's the state. The state. I don't know, man. All right, well, we're not here to talk about things that could have gotten us canned. We're here to talk about baseball. Hey!
Pablo Sandoval stepped to the plate and said, I want to dip my balls in it.
That's for the state heads. Come on, that's a state reference. That's a. It turns out that Ken Marino has ping pong balls in his hand. He wasn't talking what you think you're talking about, so it's safe, it's good. But we're going to talk about the Astros because we've been planning this for a week. We've been planning about, we keep talking like, hey, the Astros are really, really good. And we don't talk about them enough. And we talk about the Dodgers once every 30 minutes. We have a timer set. It goes off and we mention something about the Dodgers. But we don't talk about the Astros enough as far as a dominant super team. So, Andy, this was your... bugaboo. So let's go talk about the Astros. They're good.
They are good. What do you want the next segment to be? No. They are really interesting in the way that they have sort of continued to evolve over the past few seasons. I think, you know, all baseball fans are kind of aware of the team's, you know, sort of history dating back into the last decade. But I think in the last couple of years, their sort of ability to extend this run and start to replenish and sort of like reconfigure what the Astros look like has been really interesting. You know, the way that like they've shed George Springer. They've kind of had Kyle Tucker and obviously Yordan Alvarez step up into like superstar status. Jose Altuve continues to be really, really good. You know, they've lost Carlos Correa, but Jeremy Peña has been perfectly fine. You know, he's not Correa, but he's, you know, 24 and really good. And it's also been quite interesting to see, you know, Alex Bregman sort of start to wake up. You know, Alex Bregman in like 2018 and 2019, I believe, was worth like 17 wins, according to Baseball Reference, was like an incredible baseball player. You know, and like, look, anything the Astros did before 2019 is going to operate under a cloud of suspicion, but no one has ever thought Bregman was anything other than a very, very good baseball player. He had a down year in 2020. He had a bit of a down year last year. Still a pretty good player, but if you look at where he's at now, you know, 137 OPS plus, you know, 18 homers. Like, he might not be an 8-win player, but if he's a 5 or 6-win player, when you've still got Altuve, when you've got Alvarez and Tucker, and just the way that they continue to produce pitching, like, it's close to a factory at this point. It's an impressive night after night product.
You're talking about Bregman. This guy's leading the team, I think, in games played this year. He stayed on the field, right? So he's a good player who has stayed on the field. That's always going to bode well for a club like the Astros. And you know, to offer your point about them being a factory, I was looking this up this morning. I think the key to any sustained winning is obviously how you're doing in the amateur talent pool, right? Like, how are you leveraging the international market? How are you drafting? How are you developing these players? Let me list off the homegrown players on the Houston Astros right now, all right? Jose Altuve. Yuli Gurriel is a free agent from Cuba, so that's one of their guys, all right? Alex Bregman, who we've talked about. Kyle Tucker, who we've talked about. Jeremy Peña, who we've talked about. Okay, Chaz McCormick, okay, playing center field, is a 21st rounder. That's a major leaguer for them. That is, you know, of use enough to be on the field, okay? Let's go to the pitching staff. Not Justin Verlander, obviously, but pretty much everybody else that's starting ball games for them. Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy. Holy smokes. So you talk about that word factory. That's exactly what these guys are, right? Like, you talked about the sordid history that they have, but like, here's something that, you know, the only way you win is to have talent. And not only have they acquired a bunch of talent, but it also seems like they're getting better, right? They're either getting better or they're evolving to kind of stay at a certain level. You're seeing that with Altuve. You're seeing that with Bregman. They're a machine, right? Like, I know it's a complicated, sordid history, but right as of this moment, the Houston Astros are a machine, and they're a machine because they have acquired so much talent on all of these avenues. And as we know in this game, if you can acquire talent there, that's affordable. talent, right? Like if you're leveraging the amateur markets, that means you can keep him for a while. It's why they can do things like absorb the loss of George Springer and Carlos Correa. It's really impressive. And, you know, this season is sort of just an accumulation of all of these good practices as far as accumulating talent through the years. Like, you're really seeing it come through. My goodness, the pitching alone, right? Like, what an impressive list.
I know you guys are really intimately familiar with the July 4th power rankings that we published on the site. Everyone's been talking about them. Big time power rankings readers. Everyone listening has pored over them. Levi Weaver was doing the American League side, and for the Astros, he was listing their departures since they won the World Series. So Mark was focusing on the players they brought in, the homegrown players that they've folded into the organization. He's going through and listing guys like Joe Musgrove and Charlie Morton and Garrett Cole and Colin McHugh and Wade Miley, Josh Reddick, George Springer, Carlos Correa, and it just goes on. I'm just picking the first names that are popping out to me. Kendall Graveman. Zach Greinke. It's amazing that they're able to not just develop these guys, but realize who they can lose, who they can't afford to lose, having the confidence that they can lose them. It is wild how much turnover there's been since 2017. You look at the baseball reference pages for the 2017 championship team and the one that's going right now, and you've got some commonalities. You've got Altuve. You've got some players who are still there. But it's very, very different. It's Chaz McCormick and Kyle Tucker, and it's guys that weren't there the last time. It's as good of a conveyor belt that is going right now. We always talk about the Dodgers. We always say the Dodgers are going to bring up a Gavin Lux and the Dodgers and the Dodgers and the Dodgers. Right now, for my money, it's the Astros and the Braves. Those are the two teams that are the conveyor belt of the gods right now.
Yeah, well, the Braves have stopped the conveyor belt because they've just signed everyone. And they're like, no, this is our team for the next 5 years. Like, come play us. Like, we're going to be really good. I mean, what they've accomplished in the last, you know, 2 to 3 seasons in locking up so many homegrown talent to pretty much all of them, you know, with the exception of Austin Riley, all of them maybe slightly below market deals to exceedingly below market deals. Again, as the only pro-labor baseball podcast, we think it's awful. The team should be disbanded. All the players should be released into free agency right now. But if you're a fan of the Braves, it's actually awesome because you have all these really good players around for a long time. And, you know, what is interesting about the Astros is they've sort of been able to weather that, I guess. Like, they did not, you know, lock up any of their guys outside of Bregman and Altuve from that core, but they have the money to, you know, make a good deal for Yordan Alvarez, right? So that he's going to be slightly below market value, but at a at a price point that's hard to turn down. It's allowed them to have the money to go after, you know, Justin Verlander when he's coming off of a, you know, not pitching for kind of 2 years and get him for, you know, $25 million, $50 million, however you want to look at it. Obviously, Jim Crane could pay more, but they have determined, like, they don't have to fish in that sort of pool in order to do it, in order to succeed. And that's, you know, a tribute to what they're doing on the farm and the development system. And, like, you can dislike that in the winter when, you know, you think as a fan, the most important thing is that all the players get paid as much. But when you're actually watching the games, like, it's impressive to watch the way they've sort of maintained this through spending on the right guys, right? Spending on Altuve has proved to be beneficial. They got Bregman at a good sort of deal. Everyone seems to like what the Alvarez deal is. And Verlander is, you know, should win the Cy Young this year at 39. He's got a sub-2 ERA. Like, it's really impressive.
Verlander just blows my... I can't even process him. He's like... That's a different kind of language because 39 years old, 1.95 ERA, coming off of Tommy John, I reject that. Just the whole premise. Like, I cannot, that is too much bandwidth, that is too much, takes too much RAM up in my brain. So no, I'm not gonna think about that too much.
It is kind of a testament to, you know, like what we've seen in baseball, right? The differentiators, one of the separating factors, I think, for the clubs that do well and the clubs that struggle is that you're making your guys better, right? Like, it wasn't that long ago that in this sport, it used to be you are what you are after a certain period of time. And that idea has just been blown to bits. Like, we've just seen so many examples over and over and over again that takes that, what used to be just like standard wisdom, and has reduced it to absolute nonsense, right? Like, I mean, Muncy just signed an extension the other day, and like, that's a perfect example of it. He'd been written off as one thing and has proven to be something else. And like, and so we're watching this happen even with dudes who are 39. So it just, I think, is a testament to, you know, that the Astros have figured out how to, like, develop guys even at an advanced age. Like, clearly there's, like, tools in place there as far as the people and resources or whatever, the technology, all that stuff, where someone who's as competitive and as talented as Justin Verlander can fully leverage it, and it helps him turn into this, right? I mean, I think that's what we're looking at, and a reminder, right? Like, how much the game has shifted as far as that belief. And the Astros are among the teams that have been at the forefront of that.
Let's do a quick debate. Ready?
Yeah.
Don't look at any stats. The three best pitchers of this generation, right, are Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, and Clayton Kershaw, right? Don't look at any stats. Who you got?
Well, I'm going to be... So Clayton Kershaw's ERA when he pitches against the Giants is like literally 1.12 or something like that. It's honestly the best single ERA against any opponent when you set a minimum number of starts. He's as good against the Giants as any pitcher has ever been against another team. So I have to take Clayton Kershaw because I have seen... I've seen the Giants defeat both Verlander and Max Scherzer in a World Series, and I am incapable of contemplating baseball outside of my bubble, so I'm going Clayton Kershaw.
I'm not looking at any numbers. I'll just take Scherzer for the hell of it, because obviously you can't go wrong with any of those three, but like, I feel like Scherzer has been playing baseball for as long as I can remember. Like, oh my God, it's like insane how long he's been playing.
It feels like Verlander had at least a couple years where he was a little bit lost in the woods, where the other pitchers didn't necessarily. So that I'll throw
and
that.
And Scherzer's done it pretty much at every locale that he's like, right? He's been the most well-traveled of that group. And no matter what happens, what scenario, like, I mean, he's that guy every single time. I think that's really impressive. He's dealt with that massive pressure of the big deal, right? Like, that's really interesting to me that someone can weather that more than once. By the way, you know, he's got a World Series after doing that. I mean, he has had, in my view, just a really impressive kind of that modern career when you think about it, right? He's bounced around a little bit. He's had success in those places. He's signed like the big deals. He's thrived despite that. Yeah, I'll take Scherzer for those reasons.
Yeah, I think Scherzer's the most emblematic of the era.
Yes, good way to put it. Yes.
Kershaw is the most sort of narratively interesting of the three, by far. And I think Verlander's the one who's going to finish with the best numbers. Kershaw's not going to pitch till he's 40, right? Like, he's 34 now, and he's, you know, there's a chance this might be his last season, right? Verlander's already 5 years older. He wants to pitch till 45, like a sicko. And, you know, Scherzer, like, might do the same thing. So I think Kershaw had the best peak. Scherzer had the most interesting peak in that his was at a later time, right? And then Verlander's the one who 20 years from now, sort of the way people look at Randy Johnson, you're like, Randy Johnson had 120 wins above replacement? When you talk about who are the best pitchers that era, like, obviously a bunch of people come up, Maddox, Glavin, Pedro, etc. But you look at Randy Johnson's numbers, you're like, oh my God, that guy was incredible for a very long time. I think Verlander fits that one in that, you know, in the future, he might be seen as the I don't know. We'll see. Who knows if there will be a future?
I am on Baseball Reference for a couple hours every day by virtue of my job. I am clicking on StatHead, which is their sort of hardcore search through baseball history using stats. And they switched their format up a couple years ago so that every time I click on where I want to search up these stats, I click on this feature called Player Comparison. And I never want that. I'm always thinking I'm clicking on something else, and I hate it. I hate it. Well, this time I want it, and I clicked on it, and the examples given to me in the player comparison feature are Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander. Like, they know. So now I've added Max Scherzer to it, and I can do a little trivia here. Who has the most innings by a bunch of the three?
Scherzer, I would think.
I'm going to say Kershaw. No, I'm wrong. I don't know. I think it's Verlander.
It's Verlander by a bunch, by about 500 innings over Scherzer, about 600 over Kershaw. Who has the lowest ERA by a bunch?
Kershaw.
Kershaw, yeah. Kershaw's 249. Verlander's 327. I guess that's those are the most interesting ones. Who has the highest strikeout rate?
Verlander.
That's a good one.
Scherzer.
It's Scherzer.
Is it by a lot?
Yeah. It's by almost a full strikeout over Kershaw. So he's at 10.7.
Wow.
He's been doing this for, you know, since 2008, and he's been striking almost 11 batters for...
You know, when you're talking about Randy Johnson and that, what is it, ERA plus or whatever, I can't remember what you cited. It was like one of those types of numbers. So much of that is because he was head and shoulders above everybody else as far as striking dudes out. When not everybody was like over 10 strikeouts like they seem to be now. Like he was so head and it's almost like when I look at Judge this year, and it's not just impressive he's hit a bunch of homers, but look at the difference between one and two, right? Isn't there like a pretty significant gap, you know?
Yeah, he's hit like 15 more.
I mean, good grief. Like to me, like... You know, we talk about dominance, and like when I think of Verlander, that's dominance. That's what we're talking about, right? Like the dominant pitcher of the era. Dominance in my mind is not only what results you're having, but like how far ahead of you are from second place. Secretariat was dominant. Won the Belmont by 35 freaking lengths, right? Like that's dominant in my mind. And so Randy Johnson in that era, right, and the statistics kind of like reveal that is because he struck out so many more guys than the average Joe. So yeah, that Verlander thing really pops. That was super interesting that he would have the highest strikeout. He said strikeout per nine, right? So that's, yeah, man, that's what a fun exercise that was.
Yeah. And I'm actually, I went and just looked this up actually. What were the best relievers in baseball striking out guys at in 2008? And there were 10 players who had a strikeout rate better than Scherzer's career rate, 10 relievers. Like now, if you strike out 11 batters per nine and like you're in a big league bullpen, they're like, yeah, that's fine. Like maybe you can pitch the fifth. Like it's okay.
You know? Dude, Albert Abreu came jogging out of the freaking Yankee bullpen the other day throwing 98. And this is a guy that everyone's like, get him off the roster. You know, like, it just blows my mind how that's changed. Like they all do that. It is wild.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, Nano arthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon Apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
We are going to talk about the changes in baseball and general managerial stuff in just a little bit. But before we go, Andy, you mentioned Randy Johnson. And I just have to bring up that my favorite who you got in baseball history is Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson. Because it is so freaking close. It is, if you're going by ERA, they're separated by 0.13. If you're going by WAR, they're separated by one WAR. I mean, they have each have 300 wins. And what I love about it, they did it so differently. Where you had Randy Johnson spent his 20s, he couldn't hit the Durham Bowl. And then you had Greg Maddux, and he's just carving people up. But then you switch when they're 30. And now you've got Johnson being this dominant freak for his 30s and early 40s. It is, but their overall statistics are so close. So that's my favorite who you got. So I'm going to ask you guys who you got, Maddux or Johnson?
I'll take Johnson.
You'll take Johnson?
I'll take Johnson too.
Who would you want to watch, I guess? It's not necessarily like who do you want to come in for the Game 7 of your World Series. Who, if you are watching your favorite team, which pitcher entices you for longer?
Am I in a good mood or a bad mood?
You, bad mood.
Okay, Johnson. If I'm in a good mood, though, and I want to enjoy the game, like, you can get into the sort of artistry of the Greg, you know, there's, like, the Greg Maddux thing. Like, there's that famous, like, Tom Boswell profile where I think there's like, an anecdote where, you know, he says something, like, a guy comes out to the catcher comes to the mound, it's, like, 2-1, and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to throw inside, and I'll jam him, and he'll pop it up. And that's, like, exactly what happens, you know? It was, like, a guy who was basically not just playing a video game, like, with himself, but with what the opposing hitters would do. But in terms of, like, if I'm in a bad mood and I want to see my team's pitcher, like, rough someone up, like, yeah, Randy Johnson.
I think that's fair. I just love that they're both of the same era. And they're both so unique. It's not like you go, oh, that guy's like Greg Maddux. No, there's one Greg Maddux. No matter how hard you try and make Carl Pavano Greg Maddux-like, it's not going to work. And there's only one Randy Johnson. I mean, maybe Carlos Rodon if he grows like another foot and pitches for another 10 years. But no, there's only one Randy Johnson. So I love, that's my favorite. So I get on a soapbox. I actually wrote for The Athletic about the SB Nation. So Google that. I was sober.
Oh,
for that
good. One. Did you sip your coffee and talk about, huh, this is pretty damn good. Did you do it with that one?
Yeah,
too?
No, that was, yeah, no, I do that a lot. I wake up and that's, some people go and check the New York Times and, you know, the front page of something or other. I just look at what I wrote the day before and go, hell yeah, buddy. This is why you got all
look
this.
Look at this line. You know what? Like, we're talking about Maddux. Like, every time you guys say his name, the thing that even I remember being younger, like, it used to blow my mind was, like, even back in the day, he looked like a throwback. Imagine, like, close your eyes and, like, envision, like, Maddux on the mound and imagine how ridiculous it would look today. Because everybody's just gigantic. Everybody's throwing hard. Everybody is, like, this one archetype. And then here's this dude who, I mean, looked like he, you know, was one of those 80s pitchers. I mean, he was, right? But, like, he just always looked so, like, God, I hate to use the word. He looked unimpressive. Right? Like, he just looked like your stock standard guy. And then you'd watch him go out there and do what he does. And you're just like, holy crap. And like, and it wasn't even like, oh, you're impressed. You just knew that he was going to get the job done in just about the most efficient manner because he was an artist, right? Like, he was just so surgical when he pitched. But like, I mean, it's so funny to me to think, like, this is one of the best pitchers ever. And, like, he'd look so out of place if he were to make a start, you know, in his prime today. Like, he would look so out of place.
He showed up to a press conference, I believe it was when he signed with the Padres, where he had a tan line. And the tan line was one hand was tan, one hand was pure white because of his golf glove. And that sounds like a made-up anecdote. That sounds like John Olerud talking about Ricky Henderson, or you know, Ricky Henderson. It sounds like that, but it happened. And if you stripped the names from it and you said, who did this happen to? You'd go, Greg Maddux. That sounds like Greg Maddux. It sounds like something he would do, like Mr. Accountant, you know? And it's true. It's a part
God,
of his appeal.
I wish I could do that one day. I wish that I played so much golf that my golf glove hand were like less brown than the other hand. That would be unbelievable. That would be the highlight of my career to get to that point.
I just wish you could do a press conference where you apologize for your sins against the journalism industry in the past 15 years. That would be good. You know, you mentioned sort of like Maddux. What would Maddux look like in the modern? Well, why else would you be giving a press report?
You got me, Andy.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned like how out of place Maddux would look in the modern game, right? Like given like his build and everything. And like the closest analog to him in today's baseball is Zach Greinke, right? Greinke like drew a lot of comparisons to Maddux when he was being scouted all the way through high school, when he was drafted, you know, the cleanliness of his delivery, some of his approach, you know, the way he fields his position. Like he's the closest thing to Maddux probably in Major League Baseball. If you ever see Zach, like you ever watch Zach Greinke run, like when he's wearing shorts, that man is built like a brick shithouse. Like he is a strong, like fella. There is none of that, like sort of, you know, sort of like he's an impressive physical specimen. And that's sort of the difference, right? When we talk about like what has changed so much with pitchers specifically in the last like 20 years, these guys are often like the best, you know, athletes on the club in some ways, or some of the best athletes, whereas before, you know, that was less important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we talk about repeatable deliveries, right? Clean deliveries, like you just mentioned with Greinke, I think oftentimes that's just another way to say athleticism, because that's really what it is. Like, and I, you know, I think about Greinke's a great example. Obviously Maddux is a good athlete, you know, being able to repeat a delivery like that. Mariano Rivera was that way. Mariano Rivera's like delivery, his mechanics, all that stuff, it was just like pristine because he was such a tremendous athlete. And he looked it too. He looked the part. When you saw the guy, like you're like, damn, that's an athlete, right? And then you watched him pitch, obviously an athlete. So no, I think that is a part of pitching that, yeah, it's cool that still exists, that athleticism, like talking about repeating delivery. Greinke certainly fits the bill, right? Isn't Greinke like a scratch golfer? Like everything that he does athletically, he's great at.
Muscle
memory. Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? There's some people who just like can do that, and it's mind blowing.
He allegedly can hoop a little bit.
Yeah,
well.
not a surprise, right? Like that's wild.
All right, two things before we move on. Andy, did you throw a poker chip at your cat?
No, I threw a bottle cap to get him to move away.
A lot of this will be edited out, maybe not. But the cat is vocal right now. Did you forget to feed?
No, he actually through a variety of nefarious methods managed to get two breakfasts this morning.
Nice.
But yeah, he's a monster. And any fan out there who's listening and wants a cat, free of charge, you can have him.
You'll poke holes in the box like you're mailing Nermal. Just mail
yeah,
him to Abu
exactly.
Dhabi if you want.
Exactly. Gary, you want to go find a new home?
The other thing, I just want to put this in your head. I want you to close your eyes and imagine yoked Greg Maddux. I think we've been dancing around this idea, but if Greg Maddux were playing today, he'd be yoked. I don't think you can have a Greg Maddux. I think you would just... He would be so sick of people telling him, like, dude, you know, you gotta... He'd be just huge. He's 6 feet tall. You know, he'd have some broad shoulders and...
When I think of Greg Maddux, he used to wear his socks like those dudes back in the day in the 80s that showed just the narrow strip that was probably like just halfway up. Because Teoscar Hernandez started rocking that look recently for the Blue Jays. And so I'm trying to think about what that looks like when the rest of him is jacked. And it is disconcerting, actually. It looks pretty messed up. When you, in my mind's eye, like it is like not a great image. It's not.
All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about last week. You weren't here, Andy. The self-professed glue of the podcast was on assignment and couldn't be here. But we were talking about managerial openings and temp interim managers and which job is the most appealing. And we got to the Rangers and we said, hey, is the Rangers job really appealing? Because they're not going to make a change at the top. They're not going to change the GM. They're not going to go with someone who's bringing better players in like 5 seconds later. Steph, John Daniels got fired. It was before even the podcast came out. So we are going to talk about GMs at the top and John Daniels, and it's the end of an era, and it kind of, it's been a long time coming, and yet it's still surprising. So I don't know.
Like, I think, like, in the vacuum of making the move, right, what the Rangers did, it makes sense, right? Like, you know, the team has been struggling for quite a while. They sort of did a sort of second rebuild in a lot of the prospects that they developed during that time, you know, Rougned Odor, Nomar Mazzara, et cetera, you know, did not really pan out in the way that they had hoped. They're banking this latest sort of iteration of the team on the farm system. So sure, it's understandable. You know, you might want to have a change at the top, you know, and move on from John Daniels. I just thought, like, you know, again, like, we connect, like, everything to, or at least it's like a bit on this podcast that we talk about how everything now relates to stuff 10 years ago when we were, you know, younger and, you know, covering in our primes. Yeah, yeah. But, like, you know, for me, like, John Daniels, I think, is, you know, talk about emblematic figures of this era. And maybe that era has already passed, but, like, John Daniels is the sort of prototype for what the general manager sort of candidate looked like, you know, starting in like the mid 2000s, maybe up until a couple of years ago when there's been some, you know, some change in that sort of profile. It was someone who maybe didn't necessarily come from a baseball background, right? It was someone who, you know, came as more of an outsider, you know, often from an elite institution, but offered, you know, a differing perspective and was willing to learn a, you know, variety of different spots, different roles within the organization to work their way up. Obviously, he wasn't the first to do this. You know, Theo Epstein, and long before that, you know, Brian Cashman had, you know, come up through the sort of non-playing, non-scouting routes. But, you know, it's just that's what all of a sudden every executive sort of was the profile for a very, very long time. And that has had some interesting, you know, changes, like, on the game. And I think it's been very influential on how, you know, the game is sort of played, how it's managed, you know, look at who are the types of people who are allowed into front offices that maybe weren't 20 years ago. You know, again, like, everyone's decided that those people ruin baseball. I actually don't think that's true. But, like, I think it's fundamentally changed, you know, the way the sport looks in some ways. And so I thought, like, it was kind of a quiet exit from John Daniels, very, you know, classy on the way out. Obviously a pretty well-respected figure within the game. But for me, like, he's a fairly important figure in what baseball has looked like in the last 15 years.
To add context to that, I think he was 28 when he got the job. So, yeah, what? He wasn't even 30 years old. So that's one. Number two, do you know who the team president was?
John Hart.
And then later on, Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
So you got a guy that, given all that context that Andy just laid out, a sort of more of an outsider-y figure, and now he's in an organization in a position where he's making decisions, and you've got folks that are sort of the polar opposite of what you'd think this person is, I think it's telling that he's able to make that work. And when I say make that work, they won pennants. That's the other thing about the Texas Rangers. Let's look at, I know that Grant has the fascination with, like, the woebegone Padres. Boy, Texas Rangers will give you a run for your money right there. All right. That's another franchise that really hasn't done a lot of winning. That's just sort of like it was hatched as an expansion team in Washington, didn't draw anything, moved to Texas, like playing outdoors for most of that time in like oppressive heat. Hard to get good players that way. Made a lot of bad decisions through the years, right? Like, I mean, it's just, it hasn't been historically a very good franchise. And under John Daniels, they won back-to-back pennants. Right? Like, they were this close to winning a World Series. I mean, so I know that, like, in this day and age, people say, oh, they didn't win anything. I think that's stupid. They won pennants, and they were so close. And you have to weigh that against what had come before. I mean, not a long history of success there. So to have it early on, those were good, compelling teams, by the way. Those were good players. They were fun to watch. I think they had the Yankees in 10. in the playoffs. I remember, and they beat him. And I was covering the Yankees at the time. I'm thinking, holy crap, this team is really good. Okay, and I think Andy, you covered the 11 World Series. Like you were around. I mean, that's a great World Series. That was a great club.
That was a good
but
one.
But like. You know, I think that matters. I think it matters when you compare historically to what had come before it, you know, to have that kind of success. You know, I thought Levi actually wrote something really good a day after the firing, just about how John handled himself, you know, as a leader. And I think that's telling too, right? Whenever things were good, he was putting other people out front to talk about it. When things were bad, he was standing up there in front of the microphones. And like, I think, you know, that's something that was like, well, obviously that's what you do. Well, that's not what happens sometimes, all right? So, like, I think that speaks highly of the person, and it's probably why he was there for so long and had garnered the kind of respect level that Andy is referring to, is that one of the tropes about people who came into baseball from like a background that wasn't traditionally, you know, where the leaders came from, it was that, oh, they're egghead Ivy Leaguers that don't know how to deal with people. Not true, right? Like in this, especially in this case, in fact, one would argue that like that is again the reason he stuck so long, is that he did treat people well, it seemed like. And Levi laid that out, I thought, really well in the column, which is worth reading, but that's what I think of with John. Not only like the period of time that he came in, but the challenges that he faced and overcame. And he sort of broke the, you know, away from the stereotype of like guys of that background, right? Like, yeah, he's a smart guy, Ivy League, whatever. Great with people, good leader. And I think it's part of the reason that he kind of got this rope, right? Like, because they haven't been good for a while. And yet that only happened now that he was fired. That tells me that this is probably somebody who was good with the people, end of it.
One thing I want baseball and baseball fans to go back to is the idea that the pennant is a big freaking deal. When you're talking about the Giants win the pennant, the Giants win the pennant, how many people remember that the Giants lost the World Series after that? Because no, they won the pennant. That's why everyone's freaking out. So I want to go back to that.
Yeah, and I think obviously like it's challenging for maybe Rangers fans to, you know, to take solace in that, I guess, right? Especially when you're so close as they were in 2011. You know, I mean, that was a great, what a World Series, man. You know, just thinking on like the influence in the sport, right? And like this would, if someone would have done this, I you know, so I'm not saying like he's the singular figure who changed baseball, but like, you know, why is it hard to trade prospects for established big leaguers with 1 or 2 years of, you know, approaching free agency, right? Like one of the reasons is the Mark Teixeira trade. Why do you see players like Max Muncy, you know, who are sort of taken off the scrap heap from elsewhere, given a chance and turned and developed, you know, talk about the growth mindset, like into superstars. Well, it's players like Nelson Cruz, who the Rangers did with. Obviously, they weren't the first to do that, but like, you know, David Ortiz comes to mind. But they were doing things that all the good clubs do now. The Rangers were part of that movement. You know, the discussion, talking about communication between, you know, the front office and the coaching staff, and, you know, and getting things to be less siloed in organizations, right? It wasn't perfect, but like this was part of what the Rangers were at the forefront of for a long time. There were three GMs hired heading into the 2006 season, I guess. One of them was hired mid-season, Andrew Friedman, John Daniels, and Dayton Moore. I think who are three of the most like sort of important figures of this last 15 years in a variety of different ways. I'm going to give you the names of some of the folks who were GMs in 2005. Some of them, you know, maintained that role into 2006 when John Daniels took over. He was hired, I think, October 4th, 2005. You tell me who this guy was the GM for. All right, ready? Dan O'Brien Jr.
Is that Braves?
That would be Dave O'Brien, our beat writer.
Yeah, that's okay. Oh my gosh, I was like, wait,
sup, DOB?
Oh man.
No, who is that?
Reds.
Wow. Okay.
Huh. Chuck Lamar.
Oh, the Rays. Oh, that's GM.
Rays.
Okay. Here we go. Dave Littlefield.
Pirates.
Yeah. Bill Bavese.
Oh, Mariners.
Was he Mariners at that point?
Yes.
All right. Here we go.
Son of Buzzy.
Son of Buzzy. All right, this one's easy. Bill Stoneman.
Who was he the GM?
Come on.
No,
is
I am
that
like,
Phillies?
No.
Phillies?
I blanked on that. Who
I don't
was
know,
he
man.
The GM of?
Angels.
Oh, right. Dang it. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Bob Gephardt?
Oh, no.
That's Rockies?
D-backs.
Oh. Wow. What year was this?
05.
Okay, so I'm not a professional writer. This is my out. I don't know about you.
Where was I in 05? No, I was, nope, not yet.
That's crazy. And to bring to go back to the idea that if you're throwing 98, like maybe you can handle the sixth inning, chum. It just seems like baseball has changed so much since John Daniels came into the league. And baseball analysis is so radically different than what it was. I don't know about you guys. I don't want to speak for you. I feel like I have much less of a grip on baseball and baseball analysis than I did 10 years ago, that I just know so much less, which is humbling and annoying, and it's not necessarily good for my career. But like that's how I feel, and I can only imagine being a GM where you're in this post-Moneyball era and you're starting to figure out how to make players better and you're doing the things you do well and you're winning pennants because of it. And then it just feels like there's been this seismic shift in how you analyze players. It's wild to me, and I think that got them a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think it's part of the reason maybe they brought in Chris Young, you know, to be the general manager, in part because I think it's a really complicated job. It's why there's assistant hitting coaches and assistant pitching coaches. And I think the jobs have just gotten more complex as more data has come into the sport. I think where there's just so much information that trying to synthesize it and point it in the right direction has become really challenging. And I think the best teams, you know, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Yankees, you know, they sort of know what they like and they, you know, control for that and try and, you know, find it. I think the Mets are moving in that direction, but you know, it's like, it's establishing what your core principles are and then using the data to, you know, to basically solve for that. But that's not easy, you know, and you're right, Grant. Like sometimes I was talking to a player the other day, and he was like, and if Eno was listening to this, he'd be like, well, that's obvious. But I was talking to a player the other day. He's like, yeah, he has like 25 inches on his fastball. And I'm like, is that good? I mean, what do you mean? Like, you know, which like, yeah, I know that that's like just how they talk now, but I don't understand what it means.
You know what's crazy, man, is how fast this has all changed. That's the part that gets me. Like, the smartest guy in the room in 2011 would be an absolute moron today, right? Like, and I say that, like, half-jokingly, because, like, you know what? I always thought, like, what we thought we understood back in the day was a total ruse anyway. This is too damn complicated to figure out. I think what was more accurate was that maybe we were closer, all right? Like, we were closer to getting some of this stuff, but, like, actually understanding it, good luck. All right, because like, okay, you just talked about coaches, how coaching staffs have grown. That's a direct result, in my opinion, on the, like this reality that they understand that these are individuals. These players are individuals. That means the more people you have that could potentially connect with them, the higher your odds of getting the outcome that you want, right? And so like, that's a kind of a no shit sort of thing. But when you think about what baseball culture used to be and how much it's changed in a short period of time, of course we've seen this evolution. So I think the game has never changed this fast, right? The game's always changing, but the clip in which it is changing is remarkable.
To that end, like imagine you are a Pirates fan. You did something in a past life. I'm sorry to hear it, but you're a Pirates fan and you hear the news that your team has hired Billy Beane. Are you like pumping your fist like this is going to fix everything in 2022? Are you convinced that now you have the genius that's going to take the Pirates to the promised land? No, because the game has moved on. They made a freaking movie about him like not that long ago. And now it's not that anymore. And that's not to besmirch Billy Beane. Like he's still doing his stuff and he's still probably pretty darn smart. But the idea that he's going to come in and just radically change a team like the Pirates around, that's like fantasy land right now.
No, well, he raised the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what all innovation does, is that like it is just straight up harder to be good at this now because there's so many teams that are good at this now. Like they all have pitching labs for Pete's sake. You know, like if you're serious about winning ball games in this day and age, like you probably have like this super sophisticated pitching lab that is stocked with people that know what to do with that data. right? Like that have been trained specifically to be able to translate that stuff and make it practical. I mean, to me, that's so much of it now. You got all this data, great. Now, can you make it practical, right? We're talking about the Houston Astros. They make it practical. I think all these good teams, the Dodgers do it, right? Like we go on and on. Like the good teams make that stuff practical. That's another thing that like didn't even register 10 years ago or even when John took the job. Like this was all stuff that was all theoretical. If it was being talked about, like none of it was actually in practice. And now it's become standard fare if you're serious about winning ball games in a really short amount of time. It's really kind of remarkable to me, honestly. It's crazy.
Well, this is a good place to end it. This has been episode 21 of The Roundtable, and I've been doing some thinking. I think this podcast would drink something a little sweet with an umbrella in it. I don't think we're IPA or Coors Light. I think we're deceptively strong, but also, you know, a little embarrassing. So would you guys agree with that?
I'm going to go with that. That is correct. I would love an umbrella drink right now.
Have you guys ever had like a Truly or one of those? Like one of these hard seltzers?
Sure.
What do you think?
I mean, you know, my cousin says I'm going to switch from missiles to guns. And so if you're drinking something harder, you go from missiles to guns, and it's just something that keeps it going.
I like that. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah, no, it's great. That's great. Good. I think of it a lot. And it's just, you know, it has its place. Like it allows you to just extend without getting in over your head.
Yeah, you should chase it with some Roman. Now you got something.
Oh, man.
All right.
If it does last longer than 4 hours, you got to put down the White Claw.
See, I hit 25 inches on that fastball.
Which would be a bigger problem if you came to the clubhouse? The Roman or the Trulies? Brian's got his work cut out for him.
Save that for next pod. Yeah.
Brian's earning his paycheck this week.
Atta boy.
Episode 21 of the Roundtable. We'll see you next week, maybe, if we're still employed.